boy, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I wish those guys had a theme song. We'd sing along with them. They know there are 16 locations. They've been around since the 48. And they do a great job. I wish Ross had a car that they could work on. I don't think they work on old Porsches.
Don't you have three or four cars?
Yeah, none of them are running well. Trucks, sir. You get them on the front yard. Every time I drive by, I see the car sitting in the front yard. I'm like, wow, that is white trash. And that's where I live. God bless my neighbors for not reporting me, because it is illegal in Sammamish to park your car on your yard.
You don't park your car. You mean on the parking strip?
No. Well, it's on the grass.
It's on the yard?
In there.
Maybe they think it's sculpture.
Yoy. Inslee Watch. That's what they call it, the Seattle Times. How long is this going to last? Nobody, he does not even make a wrinkle. There isn't even one bit of national talk about Jay Inslee. But locally, we got to write something. So New Climate Super PAC says it will support Governor Jay Inslee if he runs for president. If he runs for president. Super PAC's going to throw a whole bunch of money behind him because they love the fact that he seems to be the guy that's really running with the mantle of, we're going to save the world by reducing our climate temperatures.
Yes. And if you're wondering about their focus, the name of the PAC is called Act Now on Climate. So clearly, they're... The danger, they've always said, if he does run, is that he could become a one-issue candidate. The strength of being a one-issue candidate is that you get that one issue, the backers of that one issue, to get behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So Jay Inslee, the reason he has what little national profile he has is because he was the head of the Democratic Governors Association just recently, and it's the political director of that association that's heading this PAC. Mm-hmm. And that's why, so he obviously has worked with Jay Inslee and has gotten to know Jay Inslee, and so they say that they will jump in with both feet if he indeed decides to run. And it sounds like more and more people are suggesting that it's a matter of time, not a question of if, he is going to declare for the presidency.
Okay. Will the PAC tell us where the money's coming from? I think.
Well, yeah.
Oh,
no,
okay, good, because we often hear. Yes. I thought those super PACs were evil. Aren't they normally evil?
This is a PAC, John. I don't know if it's a super PAC yet. It hasn't raised a single cent.
It says it's a super PAC, New Climate Super PAC.
Okay. PAC. The thing is that they not only are they going to disclose their donors they have to, mm-hmm. they will accept corporate donations.
Oh, no. They've been bought and sold. That's the dark money we heard about. Oh, no.
Well,
come on.
The light money.
Governor Inslee.
Climate change.
That's right. Fighting climate change. That's the good stuff. Let's see. The actor that told everybody that he was beaten up by a couple of Trump supporters in the middle of the night at 19 degrees or 4 degrees or 11 degrees below zero, he was supposed to return to and did return to the set of Empire. That's what people are saying anyway.
Yeah.
But he did come back. But now news just breaks that the now disgraced actor has been shut out or written out or will not be continuing with his contract there.
When this article was written in Variety yesterday, they said that the heads of the show were hoping they are finishing up their fifth season. They have an episode and a half left, and they were hoping that they could finish up his role in the final episodes to finish out the fifth season. Yeah. Then they might be done with him. Well, they said they're weighing their options. Their options have been weighed far enough for them to now announce he's going to be written out of the show. Too many distractions. He maintains to the cast when he showed up on the set yesterday. He still maintains his innocence. But I think it makes nobody begrudges the show for just moving on without him, because he's got plenty of distractions right now. By the way, you know, yesterday we were talking about, it turns out that he just wanted a bigger salary. Maybe he thought this would raise his profile. It's definitely, his profile has risen, but not in a good way. He was making $60,000 an episode, which is a lot of money for I was going to say you and me, maybe for me, but for a lot of people. But compared to the stars of the show, we're making in the low six-figure amounts.
Oh, I saw Wall Street Journal had him at $100,000. He had a $1.3 million contract. But
okay, well, yeah, kind of. But this per episode, he was getting $60,000.
Why were you so sort of incredulous to the fact that he would make himself a victim? I said yesterday, you make yourself a victim, then you turn victimhood into currency, and then currency becomes actual dollars.
Yes.
This is what he wanted to do.
Yes. But see, what I thought, I just think this idea of just raising his salary, this is a way to get a bid for a salary. I think he didn't have enough. He wasn't a high profile enough star for people to. People didn't tune in to Empire. They maybe liked Taraji P. Henson and you know, whoever the other guy is. I mean, there are the stars. They were stars beforehand. Uh-huh. Nobody tuned into that show for his name. Maybe this was an idea. To me, it just seemed even more callous to just be getting. It's just a dollar grab on his part. I can see you having some kind of wacky idea that I'm going to do something for the cause of LGBT rights or, mm-hmm. you know, this prejudice or that prejudice. If it's just a sheer money grab, I think it even demeans him further.
But will you give me that you get celebrated as a victim and then you turn that into...
Do I think it would work? Let's say he really was attacked and that attack ended up, you know, giving him a higher profile. Right. Would he make more money? I don't know. That. I mean, he knows the business better than I do, or at least I think he does. I'm surprised. I wouldn't tune into that for a scandal. Maybe they do a spinoff with him or something. But
people love, in today now, people love to be victimized and then to be able to cash in on being victimized.
Yeah, but not in a career. I get this idea where you can get a GoFundMe page and like the bus driver who was attacked and then they raise all the money. That's a one-shot deal. He's trying to have a career where he's getting a salary boosted. I just like, would you tune
into
a show?
Well, he's not very bright. Obviously not a very bright guy, right?
I guess not.
No, Tom. He's so dumb that he wrote a check to these two guys for $3,500. Charles Barkley's like, what?
America, let me just tell you something. What's that? Do not commit crimes with checks. Come on, man. You cannot. If you're going to break the law, do not write a check. Yo, man, you cannot.
Cash up.
Hey, get cash, man. You wasted all that damn time and money. You know what you should have did?
What's that?
Just went out in the Liam Neeson neighborhood. You could have solved all your debts, bro.
There you go. They refer back to this 40 years ago, Liam Neeson. And his friend got raped, and he said he went into a neighborhood hoping a black guy would give him a hard time.
Yeah,
and
so he could take out his anger. And then also, you were just pointing out, I hadn't heard this, that apparently the way they tracked down the two guys that supposedly beat him up, they Ubered
they, no,
to
No, they
this.
Didn't supposedly beat him up.
Well, they didn't beat him up.
They did punch him. They said he had gloves on, and they hit him in the ribs, but it was a self-inflicted wound onto his cheek. They said, yes, he did. They did strike him a little bit.
Okay, anyway, we're getting off the point, though, which is that they were tracked down because they Ubered it to the scene of the crime.
Right.
That's hilarious.
The video, the guy was smart enough he wanted to make sure the attack occurred with a video camera somewhere nearby so they could be caught on camera, which they did catch.
No.
Well, it was close enough. It was near his place that he was hoping there would be a camera that would catch part of the attack.
Okay.
That's what he wanted. Okay. So the guys roll up in an Uber or a Lyft. The police see that, and they're like, hey, look at that. Two guys got out of that car and then walked down the street out of this one view of camera. So they went to the rideshare, and then were able to track it back to the guy's credit card. And the police said, they looked at the credit card, and they're like, oh, my God, this guy works on the set of Empire. And then they're like, oh, no. But Chicago police have had such problems because the killing of a black guy and a whole bunch of other stuff. Remember, the one, I think they shot the one kid like 17 times or something like that, and then they got acquitted. So there's all this tension in Chicago. So nobody wanted to come out and say, oh, this black guy really didn't get, you know, beaten up by these other two. So they were really, really careful with the news as it came out. But there you go. Charles Barkley's right. The guy ends up losing his job now, so the whole thing falls apart for him. I would have tuned in to watch just to see him.
Oh, you would have.
Keep him on the air.
If Monica Lewinsky was on the show, would you tune in? Because Monica Lewinsky's famous for being in a scandal? No. I mean, it's not going to have a career out of that, I wouldn't think.
Well, you see him for a little while.
Maybe one show. Yay, that's true. They should have worked him into the final episode. They could have done a staged beating.
I wonder if Saturday Night Live will do a takeoff on this. And has all late night guys done a whole thing on this, or no? Are they still saying that? Are they doing?
They've definitely picked up on it.
They picked up on jokes.
Colbert's joke was something about how he hired two black guys to perform as the Trumpian, where it's like that's the one instance where you don't want to prioritize diversity in your hiring. Do we want to do this more often where I re-deliver Colbert jokes?
Right. Beats your lousy animal stories.
I don't know. You know what? We have scolded him so often. We have no animal stories in this entire show.
What's that? And the sex robots. Where are the sex robots?
Oh, by the way, yesterday I said to Tom, when you weren't there, Jacob, I said, what if it turns out that he really is into sex robots? And then we're just sort of, you know, keeping this going.
That's right.
And like, you know, behind the scenes, this oriented weird thing he has. Let's see. Steph Curry is with Barack Obama, and they're talking about projecting security and your finances and sexuality. And some people say, hey, the president's starting to sound like Bill Cosby.
If you are really confident,
about your financial situation, you probably are not going to be wearing an 8-pound chain around your neck. Because you know, oh, I got bank. I don't have to show you how much I got. I feel good. If you are very confident about your sexuality, you don't have to have 8 women around you twerking. I mean, why are you all like, you seem stressed that you got to be acting that way.
Wow, he's making fun of inner city black culture, Tom.
He is, in a loving way, though. There's more where he understands, you know, I mean, he's a big fan of hip-hop stuff. But he's kind of giving it some kind of finer reading. Right. And the nice,
I think he's judging their behavior.
Well, the thing is, I think you do a good job of raising the issue of Bill Cosby. The difference between Obama's approach and Cosby's approach, if we'd had enough time to do research, Cosby really came off as a scold. Whereas he's just kind of doing it more jocularly, and when he goes on, he talks about, now I understand, you know, why in our community this is done.
I would say, if you compare the two, Barack Obama's like the older brother that knows better. Bill Cosby was like the avuncular guy.
Just good.
Sort of, pull your pants up.
Pull your pants up, right?
And the other guy's going, hey, look, you know what? Just, you might as well put a belt on. If you want to get a job, you probably want to get a belt.
I think that's...
You know, I'll tell you what, I'll lend you my belt, go in there and interview. Pull your pants up! Like, okay.
Good point.
Let's see.
He's stressed.
What's that? You're stressed.
You seem stressed. That's what his line is. That's funny.
Let's see. He did not note the historical context of this kind of behavior.
I think part of the challenge we have is that because oftentimes racism historically in the society sends a message that you are less than and weak, we feel like we've got to compensate by exaggerating certain stereotypical ways that men are supposed to act. And that's a trap that we fall into, that we have to pull out of. If you're confident about your strength, you don't need to show me by you putting somebody else down. Show me how strong you are that you can lift somebody else up and treat somebody well and be respectful and lead in that fashion.
I would say the greater trap is this, that when the parent tells the kid, you can't make it or it's going to be really hard for you to make it because of the color of your skin, and the system is against you, and the school is against you, and society is against you, and you won't get hired because of the color of your skin. I think that's probably a greater trap, that you give the child a reason to possibly fail and blame someone else other than their own behavior by creating this impression that the world is out to get them or the world does not value them. I think as an American people, I think we're a lot further down the road than that. And I think a parent, you would never do that, right? You'd never wake up in the morning and tell your kid that every single morning, would you? Hey, you know what? No. I know you're going to try hard, but remember, the teacher's a racist. And the guy that doesn't hire you is a racist. And the judge is a racist. And the cops hate you, too. Wouldn't you find that to be more disabling to the psyche of the child than saying, hey, listen, regardless of the color of your skin or what you're able to do there, this or that, you know what? You can make what you want of this world.
I think that Charles Mudede from The Stranger, who's literally African, lives here now, is an African immigrant, though, wrote this great article in The Stranger, and it's just known in black community as the talk, that he has a young son, and at some point you have to have that talk with their son as he's getting into his teenage years. Listen, this is what you have to watch out for in this country. And the idea here is that you're sort of putting them on notice. It's a bit like, I suspect, parents might talk to their daughters as they become sexual. It's like, these are the kinds of things that you need to watch out for. It's easy for us to say, well, don't say that, you know, you can't get ahead. It's true. But you also have to caution them about some of the realities of the world, and that you have to over respond positively to a police officer, for instance, because these are the kinds of things that might happen. That is something I think, you know, we maybe should be a little more sensitive to in the white community, what it feels like to grow up black. But you're right. I don't think Charles Mudede or anybody else, you know, is telling their kids, okay, you don't have a shot in this society because it's so racist.
Not a shot. No, but Barack Obama starts out with the racism that it's everywhere. He sees it as everywhere. I'd say one of the most encouraging pieces I had seen in the Seattle Times was last week. And it was people responding to how they responded to the snowstorm. And it almost made me cry. The letters were like, I was driving down the street and I saw this 72-year-old woman struggling with a cane going through all the snow. I stopped, I got her in the car, and I took her to where she needed to go. All of these stories of all of these people helping one another. I think the world is a lot better off than people, especially in the United States, than people want to give it credit for. Because if you continue to make people believe that things are really bad, well, who's going to make things better? I will, because I'm going to get elected and I'm going to stop the rich guy from having money so you'll have money, or I'm going to stop this person from doing this or that. You have to create the boogeyman. And I just believe it. It happens all the time. And I think we're probably a lot better people than somebody wants to give us credit for.
First off, that's flip. You always accuse me of being naive and think people are positive and good. You're always the one saying, no, people are going to rip you off if they get half a chance. I'm glad to see you.
No, I didn't say that. Okay. No, I said people rip off systems. I didn't say people rip off each other.
We are systems.
Right, yeah, right. You're a system. People rip off systems because they're faceless. They're nameless. They don't have anybody in front of them. They're less likely to steal from you or me, Tom, most people, than stealing from, quote unquote, a system. That's what people rob from, or cheat if they can. Right? What was that story that came up today? How many people jumping over? What was the story that came up? I mentioned how many people cheat on it. Yeah. Catch it later in the show. Let's see. James Bond could not break into this. This is Amazon is working on a new series called Lord of the Rings.
Ever heard of it?
Correctly? No. And as it turns out, if any of this information were to get out, if people knew the storyline, like if they were to go back to the library and read the books, they would know the storyline. But Amazon's like, hang on. No one can break in here, because if somebody puts this up on the internet, it's going to spoil the whole series.
Well, there is a cost to having things leak out. Mm-hmm. At least that's what Amazon thinks, and that's what Hollywood always is trying to make sure that everybody who is in on the script. In fact, there are people that are only given scripts with their part in it, so you can't reveal that. That's pretty standard for in Hollywood. But when it comes to TV, it's a relatively new development, and the most recent, you know, things like Game of Thrones. It's huge. I mean, there's so much speculation. People are dying to get leaks, and so they're doing everything they can. And so this article in Quartzy just establishes that, and I hadn't even heard this, Amazon is working on a Lord of the Rings TV series, and they say, yeah, even James Bond couldn't crack the security codes to get to get any prints for this. Lord of the Rings is going to be huge. I had no idea they're going to cash in on it. But unfortunately, John, I don't think it's just reading the books. I mean, they've already been, you know, multi-billion-dollar movies made of the script. So my guess is they're probably doing, you know, something more secretive. But it's true. The more anticipation you can build up, the more eager fans are. And if suddenly a script was leaked, it would hurt business.
Yes or no? I saw this piece in the Wall Street Journal. If Netflix wins with Roma?
Roma, yes.
Roma. Will this be the fact that Netflix has now conquered Hollywood?
Conquered is they will have beaten Hollywood. It'll be a battle that they've won for the first time ever.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean they'll win next week here.
Got it. Come right back. We'll talk about the fact that kids go online at the age of 7 years old. They put their name in there and they are shocked to find out what is online about themselves. And then they're even more shocked to find out who put it there. Right back. Shoot Bingo is going to bring you the know-it-all quiz that's coming up at 11 o'clock. We'll put up the phone number for you to get on the phone to get on the air. Issue 5 questions and stories we've covered all week, and what you get in return is 2 tickets to see Seattle Opera's The Revolution of Steve Jobs. Opera, Tom.
Yeah, it's the best. It's modern opera. Mm. In fact, it just won a Grammy just a week ago for a Best Opera Recording.
And is it all about Steve Jobs and his
life? It's all about Steve Jobs.
This is after he makes all the money,
yes.
Right? And then he realizes, hey, what else is there to life?
That's right. Well, I think I haven't seen it yet, but I think he finds out that he may be dying. And at that point, he's trying to look for, you know, what's the most important thing in my life?
Do they show the stuff like prior to? Is it like, change the headphone jack and make them pay more?
You know, John, I think I'm going to see
reference
it
to?
Sunday afternoon, and
he's
I'll tell you all about it
on
Monday.
He's always changing the headphone jack and the phone. So your old one didn't work, so you had to buy more, made more money that way. And that's a imitation of a Seattle opera.
Yeah. So did you hear me?
No, I didn't hear you. I was too busy
I know
talking
you didn't.
Jake.
So I'll tell you all about it come Monday.
Okay.
There'll be Oscar talk and opera talk come Monday.
Oh,
can't
my
wait.
Precious.
You better show up.
My gland swollen, Andrew. When kids realize their whole life is online, there's only one person that they can blame, and that's person standing right beside them taking another video of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's a video of my son finding out what I put online about him. Golly, this is so sick.
So I don't understand now. Are you mad at the kid or
mad
at the parents?
I'm mad at the mom.
At the mom, yeah.
Sure, why not a little anger spill over onto the kid because genetically he's tied to the mom.
So the question is, when kids realize their whole life is already online, and they take kids at different ages, like an 11-year-old, they mentioned, so the first time this 11-year-old realizes, wow, I can Google myself. I wonder what the internet knows about me.
Mm-hmm.
And that kid is stunned to find out that basically his entire life has been exposed to the world that he had no idea of. I mean, even when he didn't even remember things, that was me at one. That was me. There's me in my mom's stomach. I mean, it's just like there's this entire history. And they say this has really become shocking to these kids. They've grown up in these cases, you know, with all of the stuff. But it never occurred to them that their own growing up moments are captured for eternity. Mm-hmm. And some kids are horrified. Some kids are sheepish. Yeah. Oh, my God, this is embarrassing. Now, it is true, to be fair. Some kids think, hey, wow, look at me. I'm famous. Mm-hmm. Look at all these pictures. But right now they talk about how visually literate 7-year-olds are going to have to be to figure out what's going on with their own image, because by the time you hit your teenage years, you're going to want to start curating it. And so there are all these arrangements that they're going to have to make with their parents about what is allowed and what is not allowed. My kids, for instance, so they grew up, there wasn't this much stuff at this early age because they're in their 20s now. But the thing is, right now, even my daughters have told my wife, says, Mom, I don't want you to post any picture of me, any family pictures when we're back from Christmas or Thanksgiving without my permission. You know, you got to be sort of willing. At some point, kids are going to take over their lives. And should parents, you know, be, as they say, it's called sharenting, parents that share too many pictures, should they be more cognizant of what their children might be embarrassed by later in life? Or when the kid is one, the kid is two, it's more about, you know, showing the world how cute your kid is. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about what the kid thinks.
Doesn't this go back to that case we did a couple of years ago in France? The kid did not like the picture of themselves in the bathtub.
Yes.
Yeah.
They acknowledge this, that there are efforts afoot in Europe, and they mentioned in France too, where you can sue your parents, you know, for privacy invasions and these kinds of things. They said right now the United States does not have any of those laws or rules, but it's more about parents considering what the ramifications are. I think a picture of my daughter is great. She doesn't like it. I don't know why she doesn't like it, but if she doesn't want it, we ought to respect, you know, their rights.
I have news for everybody that shares all this stuff. Okay. Your friends don't give a crap. If you could see when you send the picture out, it comes back and shows you in seconds. Let's say it uses a color, chart, or it actually shows you in seconds. How long does the average person spend looking at your baby bump, right? If you've sent it out and then you find out it's looked at for no more than 1.2 seconds, you would probably be less likely to send it out, right? Because you start to realize, like, nobody seems to care. You're right. Nobody seems to care.
Yeah.
But when the person sees the one person's baby bump, they're like, well, I better show mine, or I better put up a picture of my kids doing something. So then they want to be part of it. But overall, if you looked at just the general response to this crap that people share on social media, it is absolutely mindless that anybody would spend any time putting it up, because most people don't care. But then they throw theirs in so that they can feel they're part of it.
Okay.
You wouldn't want to know that. Would you want to know that, Jacob? If when you send the thing out, it bounces back to tell you how long your friends took looking at it.
I mean, there are some analytics that you actually can look at. Like Twitter tells me how many people clicked on my profile after I tweeted out my thing. So, I mean, occasionally there are ways. But yeah, if tweet's doing poorly, I'm likely to delete it.
See?
They mentioned this one young girl. She's 8, and she goes on, and she is a swimmer, and she has all of her scores from all of her meets. You know, when she was like from, you know, first grade and second grade, and this, the idea is, oh, wow, so people know how well I did. And that seems like it's intrusive information. And God, do you think people don't want to look at, you know, kids? They don't want to look at swim scores either. But elementary schools love putting this stuff out to show how happy their kids are.
Story about helicopter parenting. The story and the term has been around for a while now, and people have looked back and forth. Is it good or is it bad? What are the pros and cons of a helicopter parent? to define a helicopter parent, this is sort of a fun sort of thing, how people sort of lay it out. Because there's helicopter parents, there's lawnmower parents, and then there's the free range. So the helicopter parent says, when the kid says, I want to walk to the store, helicopter parent says, sure, I'll walk behind you the whole way to make sure you're safe. Free range parent, sure, while you're there, can you pick up some milk on your way back? Lawnmower parent, sure, I'll walk ahead of you and make sure it's safe. I'll tell you when it's safe to cross the road. And the tiger parent, right?
So the lawnmower parent is more extreme than the helicopter
parent. She's in the
parent.
Front, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Tiger parent says, no need to go to the store. Stay at home and practice your violin.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's Amy Chua's take on the world. That's funny. So this is I don't know if it's counterintuitive, but it's a pushback to that kind of characterization of helicopter parenting as parents that won't let their kids live. There's a new book out called Love, Money, and Parenting, How Economics Explains the Way We Raise Our Kids. Mm-hmm. And they say that it is not an irrational response to be a helicopter parent if you're living in this country. Mm-hmm. He says the idea is that when society becomes more and more unequal and it becomes the stakes are higher and higher about how mm-hmm. well your kids do, it's a natural response of the parents to respond to the society they live in.
Sure.
And they say, like in Sweden, there are no helicopter parents. They are like closer to the free range parents. They don't really, you know, care. They certainly don't hover. Uh-huh. They say, but that's because in Sweden, the more things are equal and it's like you get into one school, it's not that much better than any other school and they're much more relaxed. And so that kind of parenting, the free range parenting, makes perfect sense in Sweden.
Yeah.
But that kind of parenting might, you know, cause all sorts of trouble in the United States, that really parents are responding to the society they're raising their kids in,
right,
and not being, you know, like obsessive parents one way or the other.
I saw it when it came to my kid who wanted to play baseball in Sammamish.
Oh, okay.
And I went to one of these winter leagues where you sit there in the room and the guy explains, okay, if you join the league, here's how much it costs. And then your kid is going to travel down to Phoenix and play baseball there. So yeah. I turned to the one. I said, geez, this is like $4,000 or $5,000. And the guy goes, yeah, that's just the beginning of it. And I said, well, he goes, well, you got to hire a batting coach.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, we all have batting coaches.
He's 9 years old.
I said,
old.
What's the batting coach cost?
Yeah.
So then it starts to add up. Well, you realize if Mike and Rye even said to me, Dad, I can't try out. I can't compete with those kids unless I were to throw the money in.
Yeah.
Assimilate and move all the money up to hiring a coach and flying him here and getting him this equipment. Because there's a perfect example. That's a helicopter parent who's writing checks so their kid can do better at baseball. But if you want your kid to do better, you better spend the money.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, even you, somebody with as well-documented finances as you have, think it's a ripoff. But in that world, if your kid, if Rye really wanted to be a baseball player,
I would have to. I would have to.
Yes, exactly.
Right, because does that make me a helicopter parent?
Well, I mean, in some ways, but the idea is he's saying it's okay to be a helicopter parent in a helicopter economy, in a helicopter society where kids have to be able to do this stay up, education skyrocketing and all this.
Right. You don't blame the parent if that's what the kid wants and the parent wants to give that kid.
And that's the system that they have to adapt. So
I mean, my brother still says, do you remember the look on mom's face when she taught us how to do the laundry? And I said, no. He goes, I happened to look at her. She was standing next to the ping pong table. This is Chuck a couple years ago. I'll never forget the moment. She had this look on her face like, I'm free, I'm free, I'm free at last. Chuck was 12 years old. I was 13. Lori was 14.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. Chuck goes, that's the last time I remember her talking to us. I was explaining to us when to put the bleach in. Oh, seriously, Tom. I mean, they just gave up. I said to my dad once, hey, I'm running in the Penn Relays. I might get a scholarship in college to run the half mile. You want to come to the Penn Relays? It's like the best high school kids in the country.
Yeah.
My dad goes, I've seen you run in the backyard. I'm like, I'm not running in the backyard. I'm running in this big race. What do I need to see you run for? I know you're fast. Come on.
John, you're such a sad sack. Your childhood.
I turned out all right.
You did indeed.
I'm trying to raise my kids that way. Why aren't you more involved? All right, Online Training Academy, text line 98973, 98973. I am so happy Tom gets a chance to talk about the Oscars. That means I get a chance to go downstairs and buy a Snickers bar.
You're not going to bet on my predictions? Don't worry, John. I'm not going to do anything about predictions. I'm going to explain how the weird voting tabulation goes for Best Picture Oscar, John. You know, in fact, John, when it comes to the Oscars... It might be better to be liked than loved, especially this year when you have such an unusual frontrunner as Roma. Thanks to the Academy Awards preferential voting system for Best Picture, the winner may not be the movie with the most number one votes. It very well may be a less loved but more generally liked film that takes home Oscar gold. How can this be? So let me explain. When the Academy expanded the number of Best Picture nominees to up to 10 in 2009, yes, a decade ago, it also instituted preferential voting for the top award. Each voter must rank the Best Picture nominees from first to last. It's these rankings that ultimately determine the winner, unless the top vote-getter earns at least 51% in the initial vote. With 8 films nominated this year, that's a pretty tall order. Not impossible, mind you, but not easy, especially with no heavy favorite. So, if no one clears that 50th percentile, then the film with the lowest number of votes is dropped. And the people that voted for that film number one, their votes are redistributed to the movies that were picked second on their ballots. This continues until one film clears the 50% mark. So let's imagine this scenario. On a first ballot, in which only the first place votes are counted, let's say the current favorite, Roma, garners an impressive 35% of the vote. That's still nowhere near 50%. The general consensus is that Roma is by far the most loved of all the nominated films. But viewers are very hot and cold about Roma. If you don't love Roma, you're apt to not care for it at all. I imagine Roma might garner the most first place and eighth place votes, and not much in between. In this scenario, Roma might actually peak on the first ballot and not get any closer to 50% plus. That gives a movie that is less loved, but more generally liked, a chance to creep up with each successive rejiggering of the ballot. Now, you can go to MyNorthwest.com to see my detailed mathematical analysis of just how this could happen. In that scenario, by the fourth or fifth ballot, I think I have Green Book nipping Roma for Best Picture. In other words, in this entirely made-up scenario, mind you, the first ballot's third-place film nips the first-place movie in the end and is then declared the Oscar winner for Best Picture, even though it didn't get the most first-place votes. Personally, I still think Roma is going to win, but if it doesn't, I imagine it'll be a scenario like this that topples it. Okay, now John's not here, so I'm just going to take advantage of the fact that he isn't by quickly running down who I think is going to win the top 6 categories in the Oscars. For Best Supporting Actress, I think Regina King from If Beale Street Could Talk will win. I think Best Supporting Actor will go to Mahershala Ali. He's been winning absolutely everything. He is in Green Book. He plays the jazz and classical pianist Don Shirley in that movie. Best Director, I think, will go to Alfonso Cuarón, the director of Roma. The Best Actress will go to Glenn Close from The Wife. It's a little seen movie, but she's really good in it. In Best Actor, I think Rami Malek from Bohemian Rhapsody playing Freddie Mercury is going to win. And then finally, Best Picture, as I predicted, I do think Roma is still going to win, although watch out for A Star is Born or Green Book or even Black Panther, very popular movies, maybe just a little less loved than Roma.
So you
Hi, John.
Hi, Tom. So you liked it?
Yes. The Oscar ceremony was amazing.
Oh.
Who knew Donald Trump was going to be the host after all? What a surprise.
I went for the payday rather than the Snickers bar.
Yeah, my mom loves paydays. Good for you.
I love your mom for loving them.
Yeah.
Vicious circle of love.
Go, Roma.